Soccer Talk Podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 135, we feature an exclusive interview with the lead NBC Sports producer to preview this season's coverage of the Premier League. We discuss the major streaming announcement deal that happened this week that could change the way you watch sports and entertainment. Plus, we bring you up to speed on everything you need to know about this weekend's opening of the Premier League season, plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, we're recording this on Thursday morning, Eastern time, before the transfer deadline day has ended. So a lot of listeners that will be tuning in will... It'll probably be after the fact. What's your initial thoughts about the Sky Sports coverage of the transfer deadline day that you've seen so far?
Oh, it's awful. I mean, I've had it on this morning, and they haven't changed their presentation, right? It might as well have been 2011 when we used to watch this on Fox Soccer Channel. They're very hysterical about any sort of pending deal. They focus on the bigger clubs. Now, I notice now they do have on the screen, Danny Drinkwater has completed his medical at Burnley. So that's nice that they're covering a club like Burnley a little bit. Although, again, that's Drinkwater coming from Chelsea. So that might be the reason. But there's just very little discussion or analysis of what's going on in this window for clubs outside the top 8 or 10, let's say. So, for example, I think Brighton is close to making, as we record this, a very very good signing in Aaron Moy. They made a good signing in Neil Maupay, who's been a fantastic player for Brentford the last few seasons. I haven't heard any discussion of that this morning. Aston Villa has made some very, very big signings this summer. Arguably, Villa has had the best transfer window of any club in the Premier League. You could argue that.
Yeah.
There's been no discussion of that that I've seen thus far on Sky. I've had it on for well over an hour now. So I think that they're different than NBCSN, even though now they are joined at the hip in terms of both being under the Comcast umbrella. NBCSN, which we will see later today, and by the time people listen to this, they would have seen NBCSN's coverage, will take every single side in the Premier League, including the newly promoted sides. I mentioned Aston Villa. They'll look at Sheffield United, and they'll look at Norwich as well, who they're showing tomorrow on their air. And they will analyze their moves, mm-hmm. which is something that Sky doesn't seem like they want to do. Now, it's a little bit odd, Chris, because Sky does show the championship. They do have to show all these Premier League matches, but I think they're just looking for headlines and a certain degree of sensationalism in their coverage, which is very different than what NBC does.
The coverage of Sky Sports transfer deadline day is almost become a cliche in terms of some of the things. I haven't even watched it today, but I'm sure the things we normally expect as far as kind of that car window interview.
Yep.
You mean pizza?
Had a few of those already.
Pizza being delivered on set. Jim White. Right, appearing on set and then pretending to be on the phone with an agent and those types of things. It's almost like they're making fun of themselves, but they don't know what else to do. And that's the thing, though, too, is that there is, to me, there is a difference, a stark difference between NBCSN, Sky Sports News, but then also Sky Sports. So Sky Sports, in terms of the Premier League coverage and the TV coverage of games themselves, are on a different level than Sky Sports News, which are more your... kind of your beat reporters and from around the country, and it's more sensationalized. And then NBCSN, which is kind of the pinnacle in many ways, of, especially in the United States, but more of a eloquent and kind of higher brow analysis for the most part, although they have over time kind of tried to become more mainstream with some of the things they've done. It'll be an interesting season, and actually that's a kind of a good preview for the interview we have a little bit later in this episode with Pierre Moussa, where I ask him, I say, okay, in terms of the balance between NBCSN and Sky Sports, like, how do you balance that? I mean, you are NBC Sports, you have, your parent company has acquired Sky Sports. How much Sky Sports content are you willing to include in NBCSN, and are you afraid or concerned about losing the NBCSN identity? So he answers that question and he goes into a lot of detail about that. So that's coming up in this episode. Kartik, this past weekend, opening weekend of the championship, I always enjoy watching it because it is one of those... It reminds me of the Premier League about 10 years ago, or maybe even 20 years ago, but definitely 10 years ago, say like 2006, so a little bit longer than that, where it is... entertaining, it is end-to-end action, it's more open, it's less pragmatic sometimes. I mean, especially in the Premier League too, if you're in the bottom half, a lot of teams go into games just being very pragmatic, just parking the bus, just trying to hold on for a draw. A draw against Manchester City is kind of a huge achievement. While in the Championship, it's all open. It's all, I mean, yes, you have some teams that play more defensive football, but for the most part, it is open, attacking-minded football, a lot of dribbling. It is end-to-end action. Yeah, you get defensive mistakes too. And the first game of the season, Luton Town against Middlesbrough. Here, I had a chance to watch a game televised from Kenilworth Road for the first time in probably, I don't know, a couple of decades. It's been a long time since Luton has been in that division. But it ended 3-3. I missed the second half, but it was a really entertaining game. And what about you, Kartik? I mean, what did you watch championship-wise this past weekend? What were your thoughts?
Well, I tried to cram it in. I was traveling with Miami FC to our NPSL title game with the Cosmos in New York. So landed at LaGuardia right away, fired up this match, Luton and Middlesbrough, but then had to catch a cab to Long Island and to the hotel. So I was trying to I traveled back with the team. I didn't travel up with the team. I traveled up separately. So I was trying desperately to watch this match. It came in and out. I saw a couple of the goals, but 3-3, very entertaining. Next morning we have our team breakfast, and we end at 9:45. Great timing. And in fact, like every soccer anything associated with the United States, there are always Fulham fans around, right? So, yeah. Them especially motivated to go back up to my hotel room, keep an eye on Fulham and Barnsley. And this was a bit of a stunner. Barnsley promoted back to the Championship. They're a bit of a yo-yo club between the Championship and League One in recent years. Get the result against Fulham, 1-0, and a very poor performance from Fulham. Was able to watch the Huddersfield Derby game when I in West Brom, I was able to keep an eye on after our team lunch, just the second half of that. We then had team lunch at noon. After lunch, you have some free time before the team meeting and the team meal before you bust out to the match. So I caught a little bit of the Forest match. But then on Monday, Huddersfield and Derby, I was really excited to see this match, to see how Derby looks under Philip Cocu and how Huddersfield is going to look, having been relegated, but having kept much of their team intact. And Huddersfield did not look very good, and it was a impressive result for Derby. Derby continuing to hunt promotion, continuing to be close every year. Is this going to be the season they finally get over the hump? I don't think so, because there's so much competition at the top of the Championship. But obviously, the Wayne Rooney news that came later in the week is a big boost to them. They'll have Wayne Rooney leaving Major League Soccer and going to Derby in January. So that should be a big boost for them. Also, outside the Championship, in between Miami FC things in New York, able to keep an eye on RSL New York City FC, just because that was on all the televisions in New York City when we got back from winning the Championship. That game was at Salt Lake, and Salt Lake won 3-1. And then the Atlanta LA Galaxy game, watched on tape when they replayed it the next day in my hotel room. And that was a pretty impressive performance from Atlanta United, winning 3-0. Then later in the week, watched Atlanta United beat Orlando 2-0 in the U.S. Open Cup semifinal. That was, again, a fairly impressive performance. A lot of criticisms of DeBoer from writers, journalists, and Atlanta United fans. But they're right there knocking on the door. They're sitting second in the Eastern Conference, which is, by the way, where they finished last season. Remember, Red Bull won the Supporters' Shield last year, and they are in the U.S. Open Cup final. So for all the critiques of Atlanta United not being easy on the eye this season compared to last year under Tata Martino, they're doing fine. They started slowly, and probably since May, they're as good as they were last season in reality. I mean, if you just look at results, so and they're good, and they have a chance to win the U.S. Open Cup in the final against Minnesota United. So that's basically been my week: a lot of championship and a lot of Atlanta United.
Yeah, it's I mean, Major League Soccer is a very forgiving league in terms of, you mean, it's a long season. A team can be cold in the beginning and then start to get hot later. And when I say it's very forgiving, it's not like, say, the Premier League, where you have Manchester City and Liverpool going on this incredible run throughout the entire season and neck and neck at the top. You mean, you could, essentially with Major League Soccer, you just need to make it into the playoffs and then progress from there. But still, congratulations to Atlanta and also Minnesota, too, for reaching the U.S. Open Cup final.
And I should say that I got a lot of insight on Minnesota this week on the Miami FC trip. Obviously, Harrison Heath, the son of I call him Inchy Jr. He doesn't particularly like that. The son of Adrian Heath. We talked a lot about what he's doing in Minnesota and how he's been able to turn it around this year. And by the way, just shout out here. He did not tell me until right before we bust out to the game on Saturday. His dad got inducted into the Everton Hall of Fame this past year. So congratulations to him and always an Everton man, Adrian Heath. So that's great news.
Just a couple more games I watched this past week. Of course, the FA Community Shield, Liverpool against Manchester City. Martin Tyler and Stuart Robson on the call for this one on ESPN Plus. Good quality with HD stream and always, I mean, two of the best commentators in the business. And no preview show, no halftime show, no post-match show from ESPN. They were using the Wolf feed. So we just got kind of what the Wolf feed gave us, which was okay. It'll be interesting to see this season, especially, I mean, ESPN Plus is like, what, over a year old now, whether or not they start to have their own kind of their own crew, their own talent doing some of the previews, because it would add to the enjoyment level, I believe. I mean, to me, to get some analysis, maybe halftime from a Craig Burley or even Paul Mariner or whoever it may be, and post-match too.
This was a topic of conversation last night in the press box of the Napoli Barcelona match in Miami, where I was talking to some people about the Serie A package on ESPN and ESPN Plus, and there seems to be among media members some concern that ESPN is trying to direct Serie A fans to listen to the podcasts they produce on Serie A, the Serie Awesome podcast, and I think there's one other that they produce for pre and post match analysis, rather than actually presenting it as part of a package with their matches, be it an ESPN Plus match or a match that they put on ESPN News or ESPN 2. So keep an eye on that, because it's not just the championship and the FA Cup and League Cup that is eliciting that concern, but it's also Serie A. We've seen reports that they'll acquire the Bundesliga next year. We talked about that last week. It would be the same issue there. So I think that there's and I have to reiterate, the ESPN FC show is really good in covering these leagues we're talking about, the leagues that they have on their air. They're good at covering everything, but especially those leagues they have on their air. However, they don't present that during halftime, pre or post game. You have to go seek that out separately. So this is something I think, Chris, you've hit on something that people are talking about privately. A lot of whispers about this, and something we're going to have to keep watching.
But that's the thing, though, too, Kartik, is what are we missing by not having it? So, by not having it, I mean, ESPN or even the consumer can say, well, for $4.99 or $4.95 a month, do I expect it? I probably don't expect it. For that price, just giving me the live access to the games and on demand, that's fine. That's enough. And I don't know. I mean, to me, like, what could they add to, say, the FA Community Shield in terms of halftime analysis? I mean, how many of us actually tune in and stay and tune in before the match, halftime and post-match for that analysis? I mean, because most of the time it's just opinions. I mean, sometimes it could be, especially if it's pre-match, talking about the lineup, if there's any controversial decisions or any last-minute changes. But a lot of that stuff we can get from social media anyway. I mean, not to diminish ESPN's analysis, but I just wonder if it makes sense to have that, because, I mean, ESPN Plus has so much coverage of so many games. if they did pick and choose and say, okay, well, we're going to do some analysis of the Serie A. Now, Serie A, to me, would be a smarter move, because the US audience, for the most part, probably needs a little bit of information, a little bit more information than, say, we would for, say, the Premier League, where we know the players, we know the teams, we know the rivalries, and we know what's going on a lot more, say, than Serie A, where we maybe need some context. And maybe that's it. Maybe the context is part of it, is without being condescending, maybe that's where we need, especially Serie A, which is a great league. I mean, has all the coverage on ESPN Plus as well as the weekly game on television, but perhaps that's it.
Yeah. I don't know what the balance is. I mean, the thing that we found, Chris, is that NBC, as time has gone on, do cover and do talk a lot about how the Premier League clubs are doing in cup competitions and in Europe on their space, because they have so much in the way of bumper programming. And I guess that will be enhanced this season with the synergies with Sky, that maybe you just inevitably, if you want analysis of a League Cup match or an FA Cup match, you're going to wait till NBC has the Premier League the following weekend and get some analysis there. Although, unless you, as I said, seek out ESPN FC. For the championship, though, I think it's a little alarming, Chris. This will be the third year that the championship has been on either ESPN 3 or ESPN Plus, and they haven't done anything to kind of wrap around the coverage at all. A half an hour championship wrap up show or 15 minute championship wrap up show on the ESPN Plus platform. So that's or a podcast, because they're heavy into podcasting now. ESPN Plus, just something ESPN FC is heavy into podcasting. Something that would enhance the coverage of the Football League, which they show like this weekend. I think there was a game on Sunday also. Five Football League matches on ESPN Plus this weekend?
Yep, Sunday was Bristol City against Leeds United. Another game that reminded me of the glory days of the Premier League. Ashton Gate, just a great game. And actually this one, Leeds United, showing again, like they did at the beginning of last season, how scintillating they are and how much endurance they have in terms of just looking so formidable, winning this game pretty comfortably 3-1. But speaking of Serie A, Kartik, so like you were at the game, the Barcelona-Napoli Serie A La Liga Cup in Miami, the first leg, and I watched it on ESPN Plus. This one is interesting because at Serie A, and I'm not sure if you caught this, but on the advertising signboards around the pitch at times, they were advertising the Serie A coverage. And they said, okay, Serie A starting August 24th on ESPN Plus and ESPN. And that's a really smart move. The challenge, the shame of this whole thing, though, Kartik, is originally the season was scheduled to start on the 25th. On Sunday, August 25th, and ESPN had slotted on the main flagship ESPN network, had slotted in the first game of the season, which was going to be Parma against Juventus. It was going to be on ESPN, and what a way to kick off the season that would have been. But Serie A, television, they changed the schedule around. So they moved the Parma-Juventus game to the Saturday on ESPN, so the 24th. And because that's a Saturday, and because you know what happens on ESPN, and you know how competitive that space is, they will no longer be able to show that game on ESPN. That game will be on ESPN Plus, and instead they'll show another game on they'll show a different game on ESPN on that Sunday. It's a shame.
It's made worse by that day. Actually, on ESPN is being set aside to commemorate the 150th anniversary of American football as a sport, 150th anniversary of college football, and they've actually moved big rivalry game we have here in the state of Florida, Miami versus the University of Miami versus the University of Florida, which is being played in Orlando, which is kind of midway between the two schools, or at least to somewhat neutral site. They've moved that game to August 24th as a celebration of that anniversary. So it means we're not going to get to see Juve, where you have to watch Juve at ESPN Plus. Now, Juventus is, I think, so much of the talk this summer in terms of European football has been about Juventus specifically and Sarri's style. And is that what can carry them over the top to win in Europe finally, win the Champions League? I'm really excited to see them play. And now that opening game, which would have been something they could have built up for weeks, right, will be on ESPN Plus. But yeah, so they were advertising that quite frequently during the match yesterday. It was it was actually refreshing to see because I'm not sure the promotion had necessarily been their last season. Remember, they secured the rights really late. ESPN did via IMG, but there's been a sufficient amount of promotion this season about them having the Serie A package.
Yeah, it's just a shame, though, too, that Serie A couldn't sit down with like their global television partners and say, okay, all right, here's what we're thinking. What do you guys think? Should we do this, or should we stay with the Parma-Juventus game on the Sunday? ESPN would say, hey, stick with it because we'll show it on national, the flagship ESPN network. That's going to get into, 100 plus million homes. If you move it to the Saturday, we've got an ESPN Plus, which is okay, but far fewer homes, approximately, 2 million subscribers, a lot of which are not interested in soccer, as well as other broadcasters. But presumably, they were probably listening to Sky Italia, and Sky Italia was saying, like, yeah, let's put that on Saturday. That doesn't help you globally. And that's something that I think with the Bundesliga, the Premier League, and La Liga, I could see those leagues being more thinking about the big picture, thinking globally, where kickoff times and when matches are scheduled have a humongous effect on the viewing figures and also in terms of bringing fans in and trying to get them watching some more Serie A. So a missed opportunity there. The game itself, I enjoyed it. First half was pretty poor, but the second half woke up. And Paul Dempsey from Setanta Sports stays and Sky Sports. And Jerry Armstrong, the former Northern Ireland and Spurs footballer, on the commentary in this one. And it was really great to hear these two voices because we don't hear them that often in the United States. Jerry Armstrong especially. I think he does a lot of Spanish football. Used to be for Sky Sports, I think. But really enjoyable commentary on this one and enjoyable to watch this game. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. And here's the big one.
Yeah, opening weekend of the Premier League season, we'll see the NBC crew heading to England again to broadcast on location. Coverage features on-site studio, pitch side desk, and commentary at Liverpool's Anfield for the season opener against Norwich City on Friday. On-site weekend commentary includes Spurs versus Aston Villa on Saturday, August 10th at the new Spurs Stadium, and Man United versus Chelsea, the big one, Saturday, August 11th at Old Trafford. I have to say, personally, I am really excited to see this Aston Villa team. Dean Smith, to me, last season in the championship, if you don't watch the championship, I think we talked about it a lot on the show, the most progressive football in the country, in England, and I include Jurgen Klopp and Mauricio Pochettino and Pep Guardiola in that. Villa was a delight to watch after he took over that side. Now with well over 100 million quid in spending, thanks to their American owner, Wes Edens, Villa could be a very fun side to watch, even if they're fighting relegation much of the season.
Yeah, my match to watch this weekend is Bournemouth against Sheffield United, 10 a.m. Eastern time on Saturday on NBCSN. Bournemouth, as each season goes on, year after year, I've been more and more impressed with this club and the work that Eddie Howe is doing. And then Sheffield United, especially with the new signing, Ollie McBurney from Swansea City for, I think it was about £20 million. But a really... one of my favorite strikers. I mean, just you'll have to watch him to see him. He's one of a kind, kind of a almost kind of a goes back in time in terms of his playing style, but a really exciting player to watch. But overall, I think this, to me personally, this is the game I'm looking forward to watching more than all the other ones, and there's some big ones this weekend.
I'm a sucker for Bournemouth. This created a lot of laughter in my fantasy draft 2 weeks ago. But going through the first round, I got a late pick. I was picking 11th in the first round. So I took a flyer and said, you know what? I'm going to pick Ryan Fraser with my first pick instead of a Liverpool City or Spurs player like everybody else did. And then third or fourth round, I said, yeah, you know what? I'm going to reach a little bit, and I'm going to grab David Brooks. So my fantasy team this season, Chris, will be heavily dependent on Bournemouth's midfield, and I kind of like it that way because I like watching them. I like the way Eddie Howe sets up his team. I like the way that those players, young players, have developed in that side. And my only regret is I didn't grab Callum Wilson also.
That reminds me, I have to update my Fantasy Premier League team before this weekend's matches, before Friday's game, before the Liverpool-Norwich game. But
correct, yeah.
Yeah. Next up in the news, US sports site The Athletic has spent over £10 million to attract UK readers. So what they did this week is they launched officially in the UK. And what they've done is actually something unique. What they did is they looked at each of the clubs in the Premier League, as well as some of the top writers from Europe, and went ahead and recruited all of them. They stole them away from the different newspapers and media organizations they've been working for to have them exclusively write for the Athletic. So if you're a fan of Arsenal, or if you're a fan of, say, Liverpool, or whoever it may be, if you want to read the go-to writer for that club, chances are now that they're with the Athletic. So even though it's launching in the UK, the UK version, if you're in the US or anywhere in the world, you could subscribe to through their paywall to access that content. So some of the writers that are included in this long list of people that they've recruited: Amy Lawrence, Daniel Taylor, James Pierce, Michael Cox, Oliver Kay, and Rafa Honigstein. And there you have about six of some of the best writers in the business. It'll be interesting to see if this works, because the kind of the paywall subscription method in terms of soccer is relatively new. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, yes, I think the Times had a paywall, and some of the other UK tabloid newspapers have had or have paywalls. But this is something a little bit different, so it'll be interesting to watch. Now, Kartik, from this past week, there was a major announcement, which when people kind of hear it, they might think, like, yeah, what does this have to do with soccer? But it, actually, it does in many ways, and I'll let you share the news.
Yeah, so Disney this week announced a $12.99 a month bundle for Disney Plus, which is their new Disney streaming service with movies and Disney shows, etc. Hulu, who of course Disney owns a portion of, and ESPN Plus, which is of course also owned by Disney. This is, quite frankly, I'm not trying to promote any, a great deal, at least on the surface. $12.99 a month for these three products. Lots of soccer on ESPN Plus, obviously, and you can. This allows you in many ways to kind of enhance whatever other subscriptions you have, and maybe if this is Disney, you know, maybe behaving in a little bit in a way the way Amazon typically has behaved in terms of cutting costs on things, so that you unsubscribe, you feel like, well, I don't really need Sling anymore, I don't really need Fubo anymore, I don't really need whatever the competing service is, undercutting them on price, just throwing a lot of inventory out there and getting you to switch. But it's, at least on the surface, a very, very, very good deal.
To me, this almost feels like more of an attack, in quotation marks, against Netflix, because you have Disney Plus, which is really, I mean, great family entertainment if you have kids or teens. Hulu, which is very much a lot of great series, like The Handmaid's Tale, which is fantastic, as well as movies and other original content. And then you've got ESPN Plus, the sports side of things, in terms of very heavy involved in the sports. So you have something here, you have one package that could benefit the whole family, and the family might say, or the head of the household might say, do we need Netflix anymore? Because we've got this, and this combined into one for $12.99, which is less than Netflix, depending on what package of Netflix you get. So that is in itself pretty enticing, I think, in many ways. I mean, Hulu, so the Hulu, there's different versions of Hulu. Hulu has one called Hulu Plus Live TV, which includes a lot of sports channels and soccer, of course. That's not part of this package. This would be the base Hulu package. But still, it's pretty enticing. The other thing about this, though, too, Kartik, is that, I mean, again, it changes the price, the way we think about pricing. I mean, when ESPN Plus came along and said, okay, $4.95 a month, I mean, I think everyone was like, okay, this is too good to be true. How long is this going to last? this seems like they're, I mean, it's a catch. It's got to be a catch somewhere. They're going to raise the price by, I mean, I don't know, $50 next season, all these kind of scare tactics. And I think ESPN Plus is going to keep that price for quite a few years until they build up an even bigger consumer base with that. The $12.99, to me, it's going to start asking or putting thoughts in the heads of a lot of consumers, because I think the consumers will want to have everything, who want to have all access to all the cable channels he or she had before, as well as all the extra sports channels available. And then looking at this says, okay, maybe $12.99 for all this too. That, I think that's going to be too much. So as time goes on, I think people are going to make more and more conscious decisions about, okay, what streaming package or what kind of combination is best for me, the consumer? What do I want to watch, or what does my family want to watch, and what's the best fit? So this is going to change things. I mean, this is definitely going to hurt Netflix, and I think it's going to ask a lot of questions in the heads of people where they start to think, okay, I mean, should I go with this and stick with this? Will this give me everything I want, or is this an add-on to, say, Sling TV, or an add-on to Fubo or whichever PlayStation View or YouTube TV or some other streaming service? At the end of the day, it gives us more options. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, the other thing about this too is that if you still want to have ESPN Plus at $4.95 a month, you can get that. That doesn't change anything. And I'm sure that there'll be kind of a incentive if you want to subscribe or upgrade your subscription from ESPN Plus to Disney Plus. For however many dollars more, it hasn't been announced yet, you could get that. And if you want to get the whole package, then it's $12.99. But interesting stuff there too, and we'll have to keep an eye on that one, and I'm sure we'll keep you updated. The next news item is that beIN Sports has gone ahead and decided to battle with Comcast once again, and has called on the FCC to review an earlier decision on the carriage dispute between the two parties. So according to Sports Business, Comcast dropped the channel in 2018 that we know about, when its carriage deal expired and it refused to pay the rights fee sought by beIN. beIN has argued that Comcast violated provisions in place when the FCC gave the green light to Comcast's acquisition of NBC Universal. However, the FCC's Media Bureau on July 1st ruled that Comcast had legitimate business reasons for dropping beIN. And the AP has reported that beIN has now elected to return its claim to the FCC, accusing the Bureau, the FCC, of making an unprecedented departure and acting solely based on Comcast's say-so. So essentially saying that if Comcast says whatever, Comcast says jump, FCC says how high. That's kind of what beIN Sports is inferring there. To me, Kartik, at the end of the day, whether beIN Sports wins or loses this appeal, it could determine the future of this company, of this actual broadcaster, whether they stay in business or not. If they lose this deal on this appeal, it's possible that beIN Sports might say, "Hey, we can't win. We've been dropped from DirecTV, and we can't get back onto Comcast. And Comcast is the number one cable distributor in the United States. Either we just, basically become a Gold TV, or we go out of business."
Yeah, I think that they're on the brink, for better or for worse, and this has almost certainly has to go their way for them to have any sort of long-term viability.
And last but not least, we talked before about Serie A starting up their season on August 24th, and a lot of great advertising in that Barcelona-Napoli game. But, the opponents, Barcelona, and their season starting soon. But over to you, Kartik, to explain what's happening.
Yeah, the starting date for this upcoming La Liga season is in jeopardy due to a court case between the Federation and La Liga, who've been battling a lot, right? The two of them over numerous things, over whether Friday and Monday matches will be a thing this season. It's possible that the court may not reach a decision until approximately 4 days before the season begins. As of now, the tentative schedule has Barca opening the season on the 16th, which is Friday, against Athletic Bilbao. But if the court rules that La Liga should not allow games on Fridays and Mondays this season, the league will kick off the next day on Saturday, August 17th. To mention, there have been some other disputes between the Federation and the league about Copa del Rey and the format of Copa del Rey. There have been clashes on that, and there have also been clashes, obviously, on the sanctioning of a match in the United States. So the league, it's a far cry from what we have in the United States, where the U.S. Soccer Federation seems to act as if they are an agent of Major League Soccer and that they are the same entity. In Spain, and this is the way it works in most mature football nations, the Federation and the league butting heads once again.
What a mess, though. I mean, it's one of those things that with the Premier League, I think we knew the schedule. I think it was about, a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. We knew kind of the how the schedule was going to work out for the first several weeks of the season. Serie A, I think, announced theirs last week. The Bundesliga probably announced theirs about 2 to 3 weeks ago. And here we have La Liga, which could be, worst-case scenario, 4 days before the season begins. Fans will not know whether or not Barcelona will kick off that game on that Friday, or whether all Friday games and Monday games will be banned, and it'll be games just on Saturdays and Sundays. It's a similar instance to what's happening in the Bundesliga in Germany, where fans are protesting. Fans are saying, we don't want Monday games. And we've seen kind of during games and kind of different protests happening with tennis balls being thrown on the pitch and those types of things. And a lot of the Monday games, I think fans in Spain have been boycotting those games and saying enough's enough. We want games on the weekends. You mean, we're working class. We're working on Fridays and Mondays. We can't go to these games. It's not as easy for us with transportation, etc. So at the end of the day, this is a big question. It's who wins the battle? Is it the TV consumer globally, or is it the fans locally to that league? So we'll have to watch this one, but this is could have some big ramifications on the season. Moving on to TV ratings, again, we'll have the whole list at worldsoccertalk.com. It'll go into more detail. Just going to fly through these numbers real quickly. The MLS All-Star game between the MLS All-Star team and Atletico Madrid. This one had the lowest English language TV rating in the history of Major League Soccer. 182,000 people watched this game on FS1. Combination of things here too. You had FS1, who last season or two have gotten really poor MLS TV ratings. Number two, those weather delays, and number three, we talked about this last week, is Atleti. While I admire them and I admire what they've accomplished, they are not the most exciting attacking-minded team. They have a more of a pragmatic approach. And even in this game, too, they played a lot of their B-side of their team until the second half, where they brought on some of the subs. On the Spanish-language side, they did better for the viewing figure for this game. Unamas and Tuduyene had 626,000 viewers. So the Spanish-language viewers tuned in, but the English-language ones did not. And when you have MLS fanboys saying that, calling this game, or the whole idea of an all-star game, a dumb idea, you're in trouble.
It was also running concurrent with a Democratic presidential debate, which was not something that they knew when they scheduled the match, but also really not helpful.
Yeah. Atlanta United against LA Galaxy on Big Fox this past Saturday, 500,000, which is a good number there. Dortmund against Bayern Munich in the Super Cup there too, the German Super Cup, 401,000 viewers on Big Fox, again, impressive. U.S. Women's National Team against Ireland on ESPN2, 319,000 viewers, and so forth. Since starting this podcast about 13 years ago, this is going back to 2006, it's been a long time, but almost every single summer what we've done is we've had a season preview, speaking to one of the producers involved in covering soccer to find out what's going to happen, what we can look forward to for the coming season. In previous years, going back a decade or more, we would interview people from Fox Soccer Channel, from Setanta Sports, from ESPN. And pretty much at that time, that was the only place to find any information about coverage and all the changes and things that were happening. These days, things are a little bit more mainstream in terms of a lot of the TV companies getting the information out there or having their own news sources. But still, for us, for listeners to World Soccer Talk podcast and for diehard soccer fans, there's a lot of information that doesn't get covered, that goes into the finer details. And that's why we decided to go ahead and interview Pierre Moussa, who is the lead executive producer for NBC Sports' coverage of the Premier League. And Pierre is a professional, lives and breathes soccer, but also one of the best producers in the business, and has a keen eye for exceptional coverage. And he, along with his team, who work incredibly hard, really incredible work ethic, put in so much time and effort into the Premier League every season and giving it the really kind of the quality that in many ways it deserves. So here we go. Here's our in-depth interview with Pierre Moussa going into detail about this upcoming Premier League season. Enjoy. The first question I have, which is a pretty open-ended question, is what will be different and what will be better this season than in previous years?
Well, I think I would start off with saying we spent a lot of time last season building up different avenues for Premier League fans to consume the Premier League. So big focus on YouTube and our YouTube original series, a big focus on the Premier League Pick'em app, a big focus on podcasts. And so we're going to build on that success, and we're going to continue to grow those platforms and reach the Premier League fans many different ways. So that's the biggest thing I'd say from a standpoint of building on last season's success. And then for this year, it's been by far and away the busiest summer season I've ever been a part of when it comes to our getting ready for the Premier League season. I'd even say it's as busy as the very first season when we were launching the Premier League, because there's so much exciting new changes and opportunities for the upcoming season. I think the first one that's probably the highest profile one is the synergies with Sky. And what I've been saying a lot is that we've always had the benefits of being an international broadcaster. So all 380 matches, all the support from Premier League Productions, all the resources, all the content. But now we're going to get the benefits of being a host broadcaster as well with Sky and NBC's relationship. The first thing is there's going to be a joint on-site operation. So we're going to be one technical operation, one production team. There's opportunities for, whatever exclusive content Sky is able to produce or obtain, whether it's special interviews, special access, we're going to be able to incorporate that into our broadcast. Their talent and our talents will be on each other's platforms. We're hosting our very first Transfer Deadline Day show from Sky Studios, which is incredibly exciting, especially since that's been the destination viewing for Transfer Deadline Days for as long as I can remember as a little child. So to be able to host it from there and incorporating their content into our content, Orla White will be based in the newsroom, and wouldn't be surprised if he and Jim do some crossovers on both broadcasts and do some walk and talks in newsrooms together. So we're working very closely with Sky Sports News to work on that. So and then the most visual thing will be a whole new rebrand of our football or soccer coverage with Sky's graphic looks. So that's going to be one of the most visual representations of some of the changes and synergies between the two companies. So Sky is probably a big focal point of new changes for the upcoming season. Mm-hmm. The other one is, just as you know, the Premier League goes through 3-year cycles, and this is the start of a new 3-year cycle. So with that comes some incredible opportunities. There's a new Premier League access guidelines, and that can be small things and big things. I mean, one of the things that we'll be allowed access to is to be able to shoot in unique areas of football grounds. So this weekend, Arlo's going to be filming some stuff in the home dressing room for Liverpool, for Tottenham, and for Manchester United. So that's kind of opportunities to be able to take advantage of. And there's also special access to players, et cetera, that have been added with the new Premier League guidelines. And schedule changes as well is something that's been discussed quite a bit, and it's going to benefit the American audience with regards to the 2:45 p.m. Saturday quadruple headers. Mm-hmm. So people on the West Coast get to see the late game. And then the Sunday kickoffs being moved back by half an hour helps our West Coast audience, as well as helps people get to see the matches. We're going to have now a two-hour pre-match show, which will give us an opportunity. I think the biggest complaint our on-air team has is our shows are so tight, this time's limited, so to be able to have a two-hour pregame show that we can dedicate to not only wrapping up Saturday's matches, but previewing Sundays and addressing all the headlines, it'll be a little bit looser and give us an opportunity to really delve deeper into topics. So schedule really helps. You know, the domestic rights holders in the UK have changed, and Sky now being the host broadcaster for the 12:30 NBC window is huge. They have all the first picks, and all the big six matches have a better chance of being on that NBC window and better match than the NBC window. So ultimately, we're going to be able to show a broader audience in the United States the key matches. So those would be some of the bigger changes. And then, you know, VAR is something that's going to intrigue a lot of people. And we spent a lot of time getting prepared for that. And the Premier League has a fantastic plan to incorporate that into their broadcast. And we're all landing tomorrow morning and going straight to the match center to meet with Mike Riley and Neil Swarbrick to have a demonstration of the VAR protocol and actually see the match center in action. So we're going to make sure that we're up to speed on how that's being incorporated. So those are kind of the overview of some of the key changes or exciting newness to the season.
Yeah, it's a lot to get excited about, and I'm sure it's in some ways it's changed a lot from, say, the first day doing production of the Premier League from the United States on the NBC Sports Network, as it was called then, to now NBCSN, and then of course the partnership and the synergy and the integration to a large part with Sky Sports. One big question I have going into this weekend, and actually coming for the whole season, is how is NBC SN going to kind of cover Christian Pulisic? I mean, kind of the top American signing, a lot of expectation. I mean, how will you cover him? Are you going to cover him any differently than, say, you would any other player?
Listen, it couldn't be more exciting for our audience. But it's a balancing act. But I think how he's covered is going to be based in some part is going to be dependent on him and how he performs success. You know, with everything, we're very much editorial sound, and that means we cover all the key storylines and cover the important topics. But with that comes Christian isn't important in him from our American audience. So trying to find that balance is key. You don't want to overhype him, but you also want to make sure you cover the topics that people are talking about. You know, what's interesting is our marketing team did some research, and I'm going to grab it for you right now. But what they asked was a bunch of people and did a poll about which players are you most excited about watching in the upcoming season. Choose one player from your own club and one player from a club you do not support. And Pulisic was number 5 of the players from your own club. And that's up next to Mo Salah, Marcus Rashford, Harry Kane, and Virgil van Dijk, so the bigger clubs. And then you go pick one player from a club you do not support, and Pulisic was number 1 with 25% of the votes. So there is a huge interest in him. And the other thing that I think is you don't want to miss is there is great pride, and we have this experience a lot when we cover the Olympics, is there's great pride in your country. And when you have somebody from your country who's performing at the highest stage, there's nothing more special, and there's nothing that gives you much greater pride in a player. So, and there's a relatability of, you know, he's from Hershey, Pennsylvania, and here's somebody, a hometown hero that's now going on to play in the Premier League. So there will be a lot to cover, and he will be a big focus, but you have to find that balance that, you know, again, if he may not be playing to start, or how that balance is, or maybe he's playing only 30 minutes. But I truly believe as he develops and as he becomes a regular starter and has a huge impact in the Premier League, it'll become a mainstream talking point. But it's going to be something that we're going to have to feel out that balance. And, you know, we're going to start with on Wednesday, we're going to go to Chelsea training ground and chat with him for a couple minutes. And Kyle's going to be able to speak to him a little bit on camera as well. So that's the first step in a lot of interesting time for us. It's first step in our coverage of him. So I think this is something that we're going to all take steps with and try and find the balance of covering him properly, but at the same time, not compromising the key editorial talking points for each weekend matches.
another part of the balancing act too is I would see in terms of, you know, obviously this is NBC or NBCSN covering the Premier League, and then having so much Sky Sports coverage and talent and opportunities are available to you. How do you balance the two, where I would expect you to kind of make sure that the NBCSN crew are kind of first and foremost in your selection or amount of kind of on-air camera time versus then trying to integrate the Sky Sports elements that would complement? Is that something you're very conscious of?
I think we're conscious of what's the most important thing we need to talk about, and then what's the best way to communicate that. I think it's less about who says it, what's, you know, how it's said, as long as we cover the key topics the most effective way. So that's always what we do. We always laugh when we say, you know, we put this running order together and it gets thrown out the window within the first 5 minutes when, you know, storylines change or there's breaking news. So balancing act of making sure you're incorporating certain things into the show, it isn't really the priority, as long as you're having the best effect and you're communicating, you're covering the key storylines the most effective way is probably the best way to say it.
Okay. And then Monday Night Football with Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, is there a possibility of incorporating a little bit more of that into the Monday coverage?
Absolutely. I think there's opportunities to incorporate all of Sky's content into our broadcast. Again, going back to the original point of, you know, it's you know, what's the most important thing we're talking about and what's the best way to cover it. And Sky's on-air broadcast team and coverage is the gold standard. You know, they are a huge part of the reason the Premier League is so popular around the world. And their match coverage and their studio coverage is exceptional. So, again, our audience is going to benefit from being able to see a lot more of that content in the United States. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just in the broadcast. Our YouTube coverage and platform has so much content that people can see. So if we can't get into the broadcast, it's going to be available on YouTube as well, or via the social media channels. So as a Premier League viewer, you're going to always get the most complete coverage across all of our platforms.
And in terms of commentating, of course, Ollo White, the lead commentator, but will there be opportunities too for this season to bring in, if needed, Clive Tildesley and Derek Ray and other talent?
Yes, Clive and Derek will definitely be part of our broadcast this year. It's obviously always scheduled for determined on the schedule. But yeah, Clive and Derek will definitely be both part of our broadcast.
Okay. And then what's the future of the Premier League Fan Fest? Will they be coming back? And what's been the reaction from the Premier League to the ones you've done thus far?
The Premier League has been over the moon on the Fan Fest, and they are huge supporters of it. They've decided to partner with us again for this upcoming season. The plans are still being determined, so how many and how they're being done is still being determined, and there'll be more details to come. But the Fan Fest will definitely be back, and they're a huge success. I mean, when you have over 12,000 people outside Fenway Park, you know, on a rainy day cheering on their clubs, it's a special atmosphere. And to me, what I love the most about the Fan Fest is they are the best example of the Premier League experience to a lot of people that may not be familiar with it. It's an infectious atmosphere. And a lot of people have said to me, well, I don't really follow soccer, but I went to the Fan Fest. And do you believe that they sing and chant for 45 minutes, take a 15-minute break, and do it again for another 45 minutes? This is incredible. And you're like, yeah, it's really a lot of fun to be a part of it. And one of the biggest things we've focused on from NBC is creating a community. So whether that's via social media or that's via all our platforms or it's via the broadcast or welcoming people into your home or creating this family atmosphere, we want to make sure that everybody feels like they're part of something special in that community. And it's not an exclusive community. It's a very inclusive community. And the more people understand what it's like to be part of this Premier League experience, the more they're going to want to watch, and the more they're going to want to consume, and the more they're going to want to be a part of it. And the Fan Fests are great examples of that, where you can take a bunch of people and give them a communal experience to celebrate the Premier League.
And then the last question I've got, Pierre, is about VAR. I mean, you mentioned already that the talent and the team will be going to meet with the PGMOL guys and to kind of talk more about VAR. When VAR is used, and it's, I mean, we're all hoping that it's going to be flawless, but we know that there's going to be instances where it's going to be controversial at times because, I mean, it's such a huge talking point. I would guess that NBC Sports would kind of rely on the world feed in terms of the TV production and everything we're seeing. But do you foresee maybe supplementing that VAR analysis with your own coverage or your own on-screen graphics on site or any other things that can help lead the viewer to saying, okay, yeah, that was the right decision or it wasn't? Or are you going to let it more kind of go with the world feed and rely on their expertise?
Well, I think the biggest job for us is to educate people when it comes to VAR in the Premier League, because I've seen several presentations already. They have a phenomenal plan to execute and communicate VAR to the audience. And they put a lot of thought into it. They've done testing a lot the last year. So I think there's a lot of learning lessons from what's done before. They're also very specific on what they can review and what they can't review. And that's, again, that's our job to communicate. But if you're watching the broadcast, it's going to be very obvious, because what they've created is when there's a delay, they will go to double box, and the double box, one will be the live picture and one will be the VAR output, what the VAR rep is specifically looking at. So you will be seeing in real time exactly what they're reviewing and what they're doing. And that could be adding a offside line. It could be, this is the key angle they're looking at the penalty. You're watching exactly what they're looking at, and then they'll notify you of the decision. So there is no ambiguity over the angles they're looking at and how they're looking at it and what they're looking at it. So I think that's going to alleviate a lot of the questions that people are going to be having. And also, there's going to be the TV production is going to be in sync with VAR. So TV production is not showing a replay of the penalty when the thing they're looking at is the offside line, or vice versa. So ultimately, this double box allows you to know exactly what they're looking at, and it's going to really help with that communication process. There's a lot of things that they're going to do slightly different in execution-wise and what they're going to review than the World Cup. And I think that a lot of the things that caused a lot of the controversies in the past won't apply to the Premier League. But I think they all know that there's still going to be controversy, still going to be debate, and you can take an incident where half the room thinks it's a red card, half the room thinks it's a yellow card. That controversy is not going to change. What they're hoping to do is, and I can give you the exact stats, if you bear with me one second, sure. But they're hoping to improve the key match incidents. And they do heavy, heavy data, and they basically said that they can get the key match incidents raised by a significant margin. That's going to affect the results. So their key match incident accuracy was 82%. And then last year they had 41 incorrect onside or offside calls that, if were overturned by VAR, that key match accuracy is improved to 87%. So they feel that they can then affect the integrity of the league by a significant margin. And 31 of the 41 incorrect onside offside calls alone we're at a level or one goal difference match. So those are 31 games that were potentially decided by a missed opportunity by the refs that can now be corrected. So they want to basically say, hey, we're going to improve really key match incidents, and there's still going to be debates and controversies over interpretations of whether red card, yellow card, et cetera, but the majority of things they can improve, they're going to improve, and they feel that's going to have a huge impact on the game and ultimately the results. So they have a really well thought out plan. And as Arlo White likes to say, you know, the laws of the game of football were created the same year the Battle of Gettysburg, and they haven't changed since. And it's an unfair, and I can't think of a better word than saying unfair, responsibility for one man to manage 22 players on the pitch without the support. And now he's getting a little bit of support from technology, and I think it's going to make the league better. Yeah. So to answer your question short, there'll still be the debates, but I think they have a very, very good plan to how to implement VAR to improve the results.
Yeah, and it's also unfair for the, the referee based on, and then there's millions of people around the world watching that game, having better access to, replays and all that footage than the actual referee that's on the pitch. So, I'm looking forward to that. And I think it's just like the Christian Pulisic, it's going to be kind of a step-by-step process as we kind of get knee-deep into the Premier League and sit back and enjoy it. And it's going to evolve from there. So, thank you, Pierre, for your time. I really appreciate it. And best of luck this season. We're looking forward to watching another what we hope is going to be another great year.
No, it's a very, very exciting upcoming season, and there's so many things to be excited about. And the Premier League is the most compelling football league in the world. And so, you couldn't ask for anything more than that. So thanks for chatting with me. I really enjoyed it. I always enjoy chatting with you.
All right, listener mailbag. First up is JP. JP says, I can't believe anyone's initial reaction to the Bundesliga news would be overwhelmingly positive. You guys already went through all the downsides about this regarding their current situation. It was also my first thought when reading the comment about it here last night on worldsoccertalk.com. The drop in ICC ticket sales has less to do with more sophisticated fans or high prices and more to do with the novelty wearing off. They need to increase the diversity of clubs and leagues that are part of this every year. Instead of the same big clubs that seem to be part of it every year, maybe have a few anchor big clubs and then fill the rest with lesser known teams we never see here, like PSV or Ajax, Atalanta or Sampdoria, Villarreal or Real Betis, Gladbach or Leipzig, etc. Craig Shapiro says, you guys got the Bundesliga talk right. My immediate reaction was, good for my wallet, bad for the league. I think that the Bundesliga wants to compete for American interest alongside the EPL, but ESPN Plus will make the league even more fringe here. Hope they contracted a high number of over-the-air games in the deal. Leo says, could you guys talk a little bit about Premier League broadcast in Spanish in future podcasts? We'll definitely attempt to do so, Leo. I know that for this opening weekend, it seems to be that there's more Premier League games on Spanish language coverage than before in the past. So a lot of the games this weekend are on Universo, so you'll be able to catch those, as well as usually the Sunday games on Telemundo. But we'll keep an eye on that. Ritik says, hi Chris and Kartik, I know that ESPN Plus shows championship games that are televised on Sky Sports in the UK, but does that include games on the Red Button service? I remember trying to watch a Forest Villa game last season that was on the Red Button service in the UK, but wasn't shown on ESPN Plus. Also, this question might have been asked on a previous podcast, but do you know if ESPN is planning to have an analyst alongside the play-by-play commentator in championship games? Also, will they have halftime analysis and highlights? So, the halftime analysis, no, as of yet. The highlights, usually they show the highlights at halftime from the world feed. Do you know if ESPN Plus is planning on having a co-commentator? I don't think so. I think that's pretty much the way it goes with the championship. You get that solo commentator, which is okay. I don't mind that. And then the first question, too, about the Red Button service, which is a great question. So from previous experience from this past season is that so in the United States, we get far more games on ESPN Plus, championship games on ESPN Plus, than they do on Sky Sports in the UK. But there were a couple instances last season where there was games available on the Red Button service in the UK that were not available in the US. And probably that game you mentioned, the Forest Villa game, was one of those. So we will do the best to update our championship TV schedule page on worldsoccertalk.com with complete listings. But from time to time, there are games that are not shown. And oftentimes I have to contact ESPN Plus directly to confirm whether or not they will show those games. So hopefully, Ritik, that answers your question. Mark Doherty says, hi guys, had a question. Maybe it makes it on the pod. Yes, it does. I just saw an article from 90 Minutes via FootMob stating that the FA, actually Kartik, I'll have you answer this one. The FA is releasing a FA player for the Barclays Women's Super League. It will have access to all 150 live domestic league games, select access to women's championship games, highlights for the Lionesses, and highlights for the Women's FA Cup, all free of charge. Do you guys know anything about this? Is it free to access in the US? How do you think this will affect the NWSL, if so?
So I saw the very same article, Mark, and I'm not sure about the actual specifics of it. I'm going to try and flush it out. WSL season starts in a month, September 7th, so definitely want to get that squared away beforehand. If these matches and European Champions League matches, Women's Champions League matches, are more readily available on U.S. television, it probably doesn't help NWSL, or you know, or more available in terms of streaming also. However, NWSL is kind of in its own universe. Maybe more women's football on television helps and on streaming helps NWSL. I don't think it does, but it's possible. It just creates more interest in the women's side of the sport between major competitions. We know there's enormous interest in the women's football product during World Cups, Olympics, and she believes cups and things like that. But there's not much in between in the club game.
So it will be free, and I can confirm that it will be available in the US. And I guess my thing, Kartik, with this one is with the FA player is whether or not, I mean, like, so a lot of the American players that may play, a lot of players from England that might be playing in these games, if you're a fan of women's soccer and it's more accessible, maybe perhaps in some ways to watch these games through the FA player for free, versus watching some of these games on ESPN Plus or ESPN News. So, I mean, ESPN News, maybe not everyone even gets that. There's an opportunity there for the FA player to kind of really take some of the limelight away from the NWSL. So I guess it's one of those things, I think as time goes on, we'll see its effect and how well the FA promotes the availability of this. And at the end of the day, probably one of the most important things is what the production's like. How is the stream? What's the, I mean, is there any technical issues? Is it easy to watch these games? Can you have the app on your Roku or on your Amazon Fire? Those types of things could have a huge impact and actually could hurt the NWSL in many ways. Last but not least, and this is a great question and some feedback here from Leo. He says, hey, the Scottish League kicked off last week, but enjoying the true British soccer is far more easy. The league is very proud that the SPFL is represented in 119 countries around the world. However, in my opinion, it is important not only where, but how your product is presented. Only one game from the match day and the actual highlights review lasting less than 13 minutes. And let me just chime in here too. So the Scottish League for the season is continuing to be on Bleacher Report Live, so BR Live. But just as in this past weekend, there was just one game showed. And I think on the Monday, usually they have the SPFL highlights show that's available through BR Live. Leo goes on to say, I analyzed this situation with broadcast rights in different countries and realized that this is the same in all countries. In New Zealand, beIN Sports features another second division game in addition to one Scottish Premiership game. Even in the UK, the same situation. There is no contract with BT and only one game per week on Sky and one more game of the second division on the local BBC. If there are two large teams, Celtic and Rangers, one of them remains out of coverage if they do not play against each other. There is practically no chance of seeing games without the participation of two giants. Does this mean being well represented in 119 countries? Maybe I'm not the smartest person and I don't understand everything in this business, but even working on a small football channel in a larger country, we realize that the Scottish Premiership is not the best league to buy. 10 years have passed and the situation is only getting worse. And it's the reality of the league right now, Kartik, I think in many ways, is that it's exciting to watch. I mean, the Old Firm derbies, I mean, whenever those are on, I always try to watch. There are other exciting teams. Aberdeen is another team. I mean, there are exciting teams in that league. There's a lot of passion. But I think in many ways, probably the Scottish Premiership is probably the one league that's been impacted the worst, the most about globalization. So say, I mean, 20 years ago, Kartik, a lot of people would be paying pay-per-view or going to different pubs locally to go watch a game that was Celtic against whoever or Rangers against whoever. They still do that to this day. But in the United States, I think that was something that was it happened quite often. Fox Soccer Channel would show those some of the games over the weekend. But as globalization has happened and we have had now more access to the Spanish League, the French League, the Italian League, I mean, all these different leagues from around the world, from South America, we can now pick and choose the best soccer or the soccer that fits our taste the most a lot more easier than we did before. And the Scottish League now, when you compare it to the other leagues from around the world, pales in comparison. And it's just the reality of the situation. I'm not sure what else can be done other than, I mean, if you do want to watch the Scottish football and you're interested in it, I believe that all the teams or most of the teams in the Scottish Premiership have streaming packages so we can subscribe directly to the club itself and see all their home and away matches. And that's probably the best solution if you are interested. But for the mainstream, other than the one or maybe two, if you're lucky, SPL games a weekend, that's about it. Leo sums up, actually one more point too from Leo here, says, in the last podcast, you discussed the French League's discontent over how beIN Sports works with their content. I agree that Ligue 1 does not deserve it better than what they have now from beIN Sports, but it's better to act like that instead of watching your league fail directly or fall directly into the abyss. I understand that comparing the Scottish Premiership and the French League is not entirely true, but I'm talking about the trends and the ability to sell a product. And yes, Leo, you're absolutely right. If you're the CEO of Ligue 1, you have to be demanding more or wanting to get more respect. And I think for us, on last week's podcast, we kind of called it the way we see it with the French League. It's an exciting league. It is a stepping stone in many ways. If you want to watch some of the best talent from around the world, before they move on to the Premier League or La Liga or the Bundesliga or Serie A, most of the time that raw talent is the best place to watch that is Ligue 1. All right, listeners, you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Come on, wake up, Kartik. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. So, Kartik, where can they find you if they want to see what you're up to and your thoughts about politics, history, or soccer?
Yeah, certainly Steve McLaren putting me to sleep on the Sky Sports coverage this morning. Although I have to say, as we've moved on to this podcast, there have been cameo appearances from Graham Lasso and Robbie Earl. So I'll go back and rewind. I'm taping this. Maybe they've given some of that crack NBC level analysis that's usually lacking on Sky. You can find me at KKFLA737 on Twitter.
All right. Well, so for more soccer crack, thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. Practically everywhere and anywhere you can find podcasts, we are there. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media, and we'd really appreciate it if you give us a review on iTunes. Let us know how we're doing. And Kartik, heading into the Premier League weekend and so much more happening this weekend, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.